This is the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
Yep.
Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York.
Yep.
The ESPN New York app.
Yep.
Or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.
Field Yates, this is hot off the presses. Giants have picked up the 50-year option on standout left tackle Andrew Thomas, which I think we knew would happen.
Yes.
And now has officially
the
happened.
The bigger question is whether or not the Jets pick up Mekhi Becton.
How can you pick up Mekhi Becton?
You probably can't.
You can't.
No.
There's no way you can. Is that it? RJ, that's it?
I would rather not pick it up if I'm the Jets, too.
You can't pick up his 50-year option.
Well, no.
Option.
I mean, the guy has not stayed healthy. When you see him on the field, yeah, that's great. And he's been, his size, his physicality, like, he's a real problem when he's healthy and he's on the field.
Which is how often.
But I want him motivated. Like, I don't need to, I'm not picking up his 50-year option. Go play for a new, show me you deserve a new contract.
Today's the last day, by the way.
I know.
After today, you cannot pick up the 50-year right. option. So, I mean, firstly, he's done nothing to deserve having his 50-year option picked up. Why do you want to lock in that kind of money for a guy who's been so bad? And then, you're right. I mean, why would you pay him when, you know what, go have a great year and then we'll give you a new deal.
That's a good problem to have. He stays healthy, has a great year, no problem paying you. But I want you motivated.
I don't know.
He's clearly
unable to stay healthy.
But he's clearly a guy that needs to be motivated. Like with the red flags and everything coming out of school, would he be able to keep his weight down? He didn't. He was dealing with injury. Now all of a sudden, we're getting to the point where he had to imagine they're probably not going to pick up his 50-year option. He's got to get on the field if he wants to get a new deal. So now he starts losing weight. He's getting himself in shape. I want that to continue.
Yeah, I understand. You don't want to make it easy for him.
I don't want him to get comfortable. No.
Go do your work. And you know what? Go have a great season and we'll sign you to a deal. Because also it makes Joe Douglas look bad. That was a pick for Joe Douglas.
Right. It was his first pick.
That's been a complete bust so far.
It's not been good.
So go out there. Prove me right. We'll pay you, and then you can be our starting left tackle for the next God knows how long. See, the thing that's so frustrating about him is he when he's right and healthy, he's good. Like, he has shown you he can be a good player, but that doesn't happen nearly often enough.
No, but we were saying the same stuff about Daniel Jones, weren't we?
Sure we were.
Right. I mean, you can't pick it up. And if push comes to shove and he has a great season, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, but how many Monday morning quarterbacks did you hear with Daniel Jones? Oh, I mean, that's
stupid.
That's what
it's
Shane
stupidity.
And Dable are saying. Awful. It's stupidity. The worst. If they were really good at their jobs.
No.
How could you possibly know?
It's an asinine take. You couldn't. You couldn't know. And why would they saddle themselves with a 50-year option, a quarterback that they didn't draft?
Right. And they didn't know that he was going to be decent. No. And again, he was good. He wasn't great. He was good.
No, he was good, and on top of that, locker room, leadership, all that
athletic,
stuff.
Athletic, you could do things with him, you add pieces around him, but it'd be ridiculous. I mean, and I don't want to hear a year from now, if Mekhi Becton has a really terrific season, the Jets lock him up to a long-term deal, see, the Jets totally screwed this one up. No, the right move is to not give him the 50-year option. That's the right move.
I'll tell you what, in a perfect world player like him, I would like him on just one-year deals anyway.
Yeah.
But... yeah, listen, I mean, that would be a great problem for Joe Douglas to have, is that you don't pick up the 50-year option, he's motivated, he comes back, he steps right in, and he solidifies your offensive line, and then you have to pay him. That's good. I have no problem paying. I mean, that's one of the most important positions in football.
Oh, it's right up there.
I got no problem paying him.
Quarterback.
Especially because he's my draft pick.
Defensive end, left tackle.
So... no, I don't even think it's a debate. Really.
This portion of the show, driven by the All-American Ford Auto Group, number one volume Ford Group in the Northeast. Huge locations in Paramus, Hackensack, Old Bridge, and Point Pleasant. Shop allamericanford.net. That's allamericanford.net. That CMT, it ended very abruptly. It just ended.
It feels like he didn't really have much in the chamber.
Did you come shorthanded to CMT?
No, I had some other stuff. I mean, it went on for 13 minutes.
There was past the top of the hour.
Yeah, there was some news there. I mean, that's my window, usually about 12-ish minutes.
All right.
I don't take up more time than that.
So that's what you can give us. You can give us 12, and then anything beyond 12
is... You're in a mood today.
No, I'm just being honest, if I were listening...
Is that what you tell Ange? Like, this is pretty much where I hit my max?
12 is solid.
You get the 12. Yeah, you're doing something.
It's a solid outing. I feel like you can accomplish a lot.
That's like five sessions.
You're like, heroic. That's solid.
I don't know, going to the Hall of Fame. I don't know about heroic.
you're a hero.
He would announce it. I'm a hero.
I would walk down the street screaming. I think you. I think you'd have to. You'd have to choose a different line of work. Like your whole life would be different.
Listen, there's work out there for people like that. There's a lot of outlets now.
It pays well, I hear.
So Mekhi Becton quickly his fifth year option number would be 13.6,
which is a great deal.
For
if
he deserved it,
right? Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Like Andrew Thomas, you're like, I get Andrew Thomas at 13.6. What a steal that is.
Yeah, but I mean, Mekhi Becton just is not.
How many games has he played in the last 2 years?
I stand by. I want him fully motivated.
What if you had to guess right now what he turns himself into this year? What would it be?
I honestly don't have high hopes.
It's hard to have high hopes for him, isn't it?
No, I think whatever you get from him will be extra.
So if he's not your left tackle, who's your left tackle then? Dwayne Brown?
Probably, yeah. Dwayne Brown's fine if he can stay healthy.
What are you saying, RJ?
I said the Matt Miller sound is
Matt,
solid.
Matt Miller, he's our draft insider and expert.
If you want it.
Yeah, I want it because it's going to put Rick in a bad mood.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's what we have to do. We have to take everyone. Raymond, you agree with that? At least today we have to bring everyone down to our mood?
Yes, I was just telling Rick and RJ, you know, I'm proud of you. You didn't yell at RJ this time, so it's progress for you.
No, I did not. Matt Miller, ESPN Radio, and of course he's NFL draft analyst for us here at ESPN. He doesn't like the pick of McDonald.
Man, I didn't think the Jets did a very good job. And here's my big reason why. Will McDonald could become a very, very good player. But everyone knew they needed a left tackle. And we started to see those guys come off the board. Paris Johnson comes off. Peter Skronsky comes off. And you're like, oh, no, there's a run on offensive linemen. What are we going to do? Darnell Wright comes off the board, you know, and it's like, gosh, there's one guy left, Broderick Jones. And the Jets are sitting there waiting, and the New England Patriots call Pittsburgh and say, hey, you guys need a tackle, right? It almost felt to me, guys, like they panicked a little bit.
What do you say to that? That make you feel good?
No, I don't think it doesn't make me feel good, but you'd have to think that Joe Douglas thought that this was a possibility. I think we talked about it the day before the draft, what the options were. Because you swapped down to 15th, there was a real chance that the three guys you liked would be gone. Unless you wanted to be active and move up to get one of them. I mean, offensive tackle was what needed to be addressed.
I know they were not flush with draft capital. They should have moved up and taken a tackle. That they needed a tackle.
The most important thing this season is to protect Aaron Rodgers. And now
it's dicey.
It's dicey, but it's now, you know, strength in numbers. So now we'll bring in Billy Turner, who has a history with Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers.
There's a reason why Billy Turner was available.
Right, but he's a veteran guy. I mean, he'd be more of a right tackle. And you're hoping that Dwayne Brown can stay healthy.
Well, you're hoping Becton is the guy. That's the one that makes the most sense. I agree with you. And then if not him, then Dwayne Brown. And now I don't know. Feels like you're taking shots in the dark at this point.
But you also have the ability to put AVT at tackle, too, because he's shown he's capable of doing that.
You do, but that's not where you'd like to play him, ideally.
They like Max Mitchell.
I think he's a decent player.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, you have some options. It's not ideal.
Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Good morning, Ira. You're on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, boys. How are you? And I totally agree with both of you. By the way, Dave, that question you answered about Jonah Williams last week, it becomes more and more enticing and just... The price, I just don't think the Jets are willing to do that.
So how far are you willing to go with Aaron? Like, you're all in on Aaron Rodgers. You're in an absolute win-now mentality. And then you say, on the other hand, well, we're not willing to mortgage pieces of the future. Why not?
I would give up a third or fourth round pick if I could get him and signed to a decent contract. I personally would make the move because I think Becton, and I hope I'm wrong, I think it's a waste of time.
You think you could get Jonah Williams for a third or fourth round pick? If you could do that and you didn't do it, I think that would be like franchise malpractice.
Yeah, no, I think you could get him because they want to get rid of, you know, they don't want to pay him. So, you know, maybe get a third round and goes to a conditional two, but Douglas isn't going to give up a first and second round pick.
No, and I wouldn't give up a first, but if I could give up a third and a conditional two,
yeah, I think I would do it.
I know how you couldn't do that.
Yeah,
well, you got to also remember what's looming after the season, though, financially, with the money.
I get that, but
for Aaron Rodgers being pushed back to next season.
Yeah, but they could always, you know, they got good pencil sharpeners over there and erasers, so they could play. They could always finagle the the cap. But, you know, with the Becton, I'd be totally floored if they picked up the fifth-year option. I don't even think it's a question, even a discussion. I don't know what to expect out of him. And that's the sad part, because this team is ready to win now if they stay healthy. You could maybe tweak one of the linebacker spots, but right now your left tackle is a glaring hole, and you're depending on a 38-year-old guy and a guy that's had knee problem the last 2 years. I think they have to solve that problem before they open up in September.
How do you solve it, though? Unless you make a trade, and how many guys that are capable of playing left tackle will be available? How do you solve the problem?
Go get Jonah Williams, like you suggested. If you could somehow reasonably get him at a decent price, or you're not giving up like a crazy pick and the money is decent, I'm sorry, I'd make the move, because right now they've struck out at left tackle.
Mekhi Becton, I mean, he's played 15 games. He started 14 of them. So, I mean, as far as picking up his fifth-year option, I would have a hard time believing they're going to do that. Here's what I don't really fully understand, and maybe you can explain it to me. So, we spent how many days going back and forth with Joe Douglas in Green Bay trying to figure this thing with Aaron Rodgers out, what the compensation would be, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the time we thought that, you know, the big holdup was, you know, Aaron mentioned on McAfee that he went into the darkness and 90% retired. So there was a fear now from the Jet side that it would only be 1 year and they wanted to protect themselves. So, you know, the deal, whatever the compensation, the second round pick or whatever would be, the conditional pick, they were fine with it. But what would the give back be if he retired?
Correct.
And then as we finally got through the process, we realized that, or at least they said that one of the sticking points may have been swapping 13 and 15. Well, if you're Joe Douglas and your biggest fear in this draft would be all the offensive tackles are gone, or maybe you thought they'd be gone before 13 anyway,
right?
That you swapped the pick. Did Green Bay, to take Luke Van Ness, need the 13th pick? That they couldn't have got him at 15?
Yeah, they could have.
So was it really that important? Like, would...
Well, but Green Bay want, I mean, but you want something more, right? You want like a sweetener to the deal.
Well, let me give it to you next year then.
Well, they're getting it next year.
Okay, but let me add. I'll give you something else.
So you give
next
the
year.
Third next year.
I'll give you the third next year.
Well, I mean, my point is, why didn't the Jets try to get back up to 13 or 12 to get that?
Well,
tackle?
He was trying to get more picks. I mean, you saw
but
that.
But he got more by picks later.
By the end. Well, again, but you already gave up your second. And you only had five picks going into the draft.
But you need... Why not give up like next... You don't think you're going
to
move...
No, but that's what I'm saying, though. It's more important for the Jets to be in a spot where they can get the offensive tackle.
I agree with you. So why didn't you call Green Bay back up in Gutekunst and say, you know what? I'll give you next year's three. Let's swap 13 for 15 now. You already had...
It would have been... I mean, it probably wouldn't have been a bad idea unless, for some reason, Green Bay thought that Luke Van Ness was going to go at 14. Which I have a hard time believing.
To the Patriots... And you were that in love with Luke Van Ness that you absolutely had to have him?
That's what I mean. It would seem like it would be more important for the Jets to be at 13 to try to get the offensive tackle than two picks later for the Green Bay Packers to get Luke Van Ness.
Yeah, I think Douglas is very good. I don't think he had a great draft. I think you needed a legitimate left tackle, and they don't have it.
It felt like a bit of a misstep swapping those picks now. I know hindsight is 20/20, and I don't want a Monday morning quarterback to think, but even, I mean, at the time when we said it, I mean, was that absolutely something you had to do?
And especially with New England having 14.
Ugh.
That's the thing. It's almost as New England was like, let's trade with a team that we know is going to take the guy that the Jets want. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what that sound was.
That's what Belichick loves to do.
Hey, Pittsburgh, I heard you need an offensive tackle. Come take our pick.
That's right.
So the Jets can't get him.
I mean, it's actually smart if you think about it.
No, I mean, it sucks because, again, I mean, this is the definition of win now. Like, if you look up the definition of what does win now mean, this is
you are all... That's why he's like, well, I don't know that I'd trade a third for... You wouldn't trade a third for Jonah Williams?
It's more the financial part of it.
You know what? You figure it out.
Well, I know you say figure it out, but, I mean, that's when you're adding, like, dummy years to a guy who's going to continue to play as opposed to someone that could just retire.
You need a left. If you don't have a left tackle, this whole experiment is going to be an absolute disaster.
I get it.
So even if it means that next year you're over the cap and you have to cut some guys, it might be good. Then that's what you have to do. You're in it to win it this year.
I understand what you're saying. But you're trying to do. I mean, you're trying to do both at the same time here.
But are you? Like, do you think you have a real chance to win the Super Bowl
this season?
Yeah.
I think that we're probably in the conversation.
You're in it, right?
Yeah,
you're in it. Okay, so then go all in. Then go bring in Jonah Williams. Then mortgage whatever it means for next season. Like, you have a real chance. You haven't been to a Super Bowl in 50-something years.
I know. I get what you're saying. And, of course, Green Bay doesn't want to do the Jets any favors anyway.
Why would they?
Of course not. Because, I mean, their GM does not like Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers doesn't like him.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah. So if we can affect your ability to get a tackle that's going to help him, we're going to do it. But if I'm Joe Douglas, I would say, I know what you're trying to do. We're not going to let that happen. We'll give you whatever it is.
All right, well, if they would have included another pick next year, they probably could have got it done. That was the last piece of the deal that got done.
Yeah, we don't know, though.
We don't know. Let's go to Steve in the car. Steve, good morning. You're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. How are you?
You want, like, the pat answer where I nod my head as you walk by, or you want the honest answer?
I'm just going to get into it. So, basically, from what I understand, all the reading I've been doing, the Jets weren't interested in Broderick Jones. They had no interest in him. From what I understand, they didn't like the off-field concerns, and they just didn't like him. And also, from what I'm gathering, like, you guys feel comfortable going into a season with a rookie left tackle, protecting a 40-year-old quarterback? At least I have a veteran in DB that was solid last year. He was solid last year with a shoulder injury. So
Now here's the thing. You'd have Becton, Brown, and a rookie left tackle, right? You'd have three guys to potentially protect.
Becton on the right side.
No, but what Dave is saying is that to have... Now, you might be right. They didn't like Broderick Jones. I didn't read that or hear that. But if you have Dwayne Brown, who's good when he's healthy, and then you have a guy with the upside of a Broderick Jones, that if, God forbid, something happens to Dwayne Brown...
And then you have Becton.
...that you can throw
in. But Rick, you're a contending team. You can't have the 15th overall pick not contribute for a year. At least Willie McDonald's going to come in on pass rushing downs. He's going to make plays.
How do you know that? He could be great, but how can you sit here and tell me that he's going to unequivocally contribute to this team?
At least he's going to play, Dave.
How do you know that?
He's going to play for a full year.
How do you know that? You don't know that.
Dave, he's going to play.
How can you sit here and definitively
give him a
likelihood? But, I mean, Steven, did the offensive line stay healthy last season or no?
You know it didn't.
No, right. So, I mean, that's the most important thing. Is it nice to have, I mean, is it nice to have an extra pass rusher? Yeah, I'm sure Robert Saleh loves it. I mean, that's what they do. They come at you in waves. But, I mean, I hope to God he's great. But a situational pass rusher... Or in insurance on my offensive line, which is going to be the most important thing to us having success this season. Give me the insurance.
And how do you sit here and say you know that McDonald is going to contribute and play a lot, but a rookie left tackle, there's no chance? You have no idea.
I don't think you know.
Yeah, of course you don't know.
You hope.
If you knew, this wouldn't be a huge question mark, the NFL draft.
Right, you hope. We just played Matt Miller, right? I mean, he's a guy that studies, that's his job to study the draft.
Right.
That said he thought the Jets panicked, that they reached for McDonald.
Well, there's also rumblings that they tried to trade out of the pick.
No, they did. That's why they let it run down so long.
So,
no one wanted it.
Josh in Brooklyn. Good morning, Josh.
Yeah, hey, guys. So, I think that the thing that the guys that people are trying to explain with you guys is I think you guys are kind of blown out of proportion is that the left tackle that they, the rookie left tackle they probably were going to pick, he probably wasn't really going to play much as yet unless the team stunk. Because they have so much depth. I don't know if they're going to, you know, they're going to go into competition with Dwayne Brown and Mekhi Becton into the summer when they pick for who's left tackle. But with the left tackle they were going to pick, the reports of him was that he still needed to be worked up and coached, you know? So I don't know if you would really trust that to have that left tackle to protect Aaron Rodgers unless the rest of the depth is horrible on that team. You get what I'm saying? So if everybody gets injured and he's your last resort, I don't see the big deal.
Well, how do you have any faith in Mekhi Becton, Josh?
No, but I'm not saying I have faith, but then how could you have faith in a rookie left tackle then? You get what I'm saying? And they can probably go, and they can. I don't think they're done here. I don't think they're done. The reports were that they were looking at Jonah Williams again a trade. So I'm pretty sure that he probably wants more experience on the left tackle side instead of just letting it all out for a rookie left tackle. Well, he probably needs development, because then if he comes in that first year and he looks like Evan Neal did, is that going to be good and everybody's going to kill him?
And left tackle is harder than right tackle. So it's a fair point that to say we're going to, you know, draft the guy and just throw him at left tackle and he's going to be great. You have no idea that that's the case. Now, if they finish and they get Jonah Williams and you head into the year with him as your starting left tackle, now that's different. But right now, I think the Jets didn't address a glaring need in the draft.
I think we talked about this yesterday, and I asked you the question. I mean, was Andrew Thomas good in his first year? You said no. Was Evan Neal good in his first year? No. So, I mean, I understand that part of the argument. I just think that, I mean, you have the opportunity with your first round pick to address something that could end up being a problem. I mean, you take the chance. I mean, hopefully Dwayne Brown stays healthy, but he'll be 38 when the season starts. Right? I mean, that's old. Not a young man.
That's old for a left tackle.
Mekhi Becton is not someone that you can trust.
Mekhi Becton, I believe, has played one game in the last 2 years. Is that right?
2021, he played one game.
So how could you count on this?
I don't think you can.
So now you're, if you don't count on him, you believe that your starting left tackle is going to be a 38-year-old
38-year-old, and then you're going to have to figure out what you're doing on the right side. You brought in Turner. You got Max Mitchell.
I think it'd be Mitchell. I think in a perfect world, that's what they put at right tackle. That's a big thing, though, for the Jets. The weapons are going to be really good. The quarterback should be fine. Better than fine.
It's giving yourself the ability to take advantage of the weapons.
Right.
That's what it is.
But if your offensive line is no good, I mean, it can make the best quarterback look pedestrian.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. And that's going to be, for them, the biggest unknown as we go into training camp.
That's right. If I told you right now the offensive line is going to be good, you would feel like this team has a real chance to do things.
Absolutely.
Like special big things.
Absolutely.
And if I told you it's not going to be good, that could prevent you from doing any of the special things you think you can do.
I agree with you.
Let's go to Adam in Melville. Hi, Adam. You're on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. So just thinking about New York sports and all the majors, when was the last time a team won a major tournament? Would it be the Giants?
When you say major tournament, yeah, it'd be the Giants in 2011.
The last title was over 10 years ago in this big mecca with all this money. So we live in this era where it's all about the quick fix, right? Does the quick fix ever work here? It never does. Last night's loss was terrible to the Devils. Patrick Kane, you bring him in, he's supposed to be a superstar, right? But it's not on him. It's on the owner. It's on the GM. It's on the coach.
How is it on the owner? How is it on the owner? You want to blame the GM and the coach, fine, but how is it on the owner?
Because he brings in the people who run the organization, just like Woody Johnson. He's not bringing in the right people.
Oh, my God. Chris Drury's doing a really good job. No, I don't agree with your call.
Well, it's a terrible call.
Bye-bye.
I mean, that's the truth is it's a terrible call. They went to the Final Four last year and led 2-0. They were way ahead of what people thought they were going to be able to do last season. This is a bitter pill to swallow.
The Rangers felt like they had everything that they needed. And they had guys underperform, and they went up against a team that just was, I mean, apparently a bad matchup for them. They could not handle the speed of the Devils. Now, I don't think it's reason to panic and start blowing things up. Chris Drury's done a really good job.
He's done a good job.
Like he made moves he thought addressed certain needs. The Kane one wasn't the initial one he was going to make. The asking price was too much, so he went Tarasenko and Mikkola, which was a good move. And then somehow managed to bring Kane in because he thought, like we all thought, that the chemistry you saw between Panarin and Kane in Chicago would translate, and it didn't. And then, I mean, it's almost like he had too much because then you try to incorporate Kane into that first power play. That screwed that up. I mean, it's just... Which is partly coaching, too.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen.
But which is partly coaching, too, man. I mean, I don't know how many times you have to say it. Like, Mika should be in a certain spot. Then all of a sudden, he's in the bumper. Like, it's frustrating things like that. You want to ask me questions about the coaching. It's stupid stuff like that. Like, you know where the guy is. Put guys in the best spot to be successful. This is Mika's spot.
Why would he have taken Mika out of that spot?
Great question. Because normally how you would do it. And not to get deep in the woods, but for that bumper, if you're going to work it off the right side, you'd want a right-handed shot.
Okay.
So that guy can have a one-time opportunity there. So it ends up being Tarasenko, who's the left-handed shot, so who can tip, but he's not a real option. So puck goes, just think about it like this way. Puck goes from Panarin on the half wall, Kreider slides to the left side of the net, pass down to Kreider from a right-handed shot. Now I'm a one-time opportunity. If I'm a left-handed shot,
Last year in the postseason, he was so good in that spot.
He was so good.
So why would you remove him from that spot?
Well, think about the power play when Strome was there as the bumper.
Yeah.
How good it was.
It was. But the power play, the first two games of this series was good. Yeah. And then just fell apart.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere, Dave.
I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of Rangers. Devils fans obviously very excited today. So we started with 5 in the postseason. Now we've got 2 left of the locals. Devils and the Knicks.
Devils took care of business last night. Knicks got to take care of business tonight.
Knicks game 2. That's a 7 o'clock pregame show. 7:30 tip-off at the Garden. A game that they absolutely have to win. Unequivocally, absolutely have to win that game.
Have to win.
Yeah. They lose that and it's like a Morgan here tomorrow.
And we'll see how hobbled Jimmy Butler is. I'm hoping extremely hobbled.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't play.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Wouldn't that be great?
As long as Randall and Brunson play.
Brunson's got to play,
no? But tell me the second you saw Brunson is questionable, you almost had a nervous breakdown.
So right now, would you sign? This is a good question. Would you sign right now, no Randall, no Butler?
Yes.
Yeah, so would I.
Yep.
So would I.
Yeah, I mean, that's how important Butler is to that team.
Butler's awesome.
He's great.
And the bigger the moment, the better he is, too.
Yeah, but I mean, you expect Butler to be good. I mean, let's try not to have Gabe Vincent drop 20. Would be nice.
Yeah. Larry's the one. Because I've watched Larry a lot this year. He stinks.
Not now.
He didn't stink the other day.
No, he didn't.
No, he really did not.
No, he turned back into what Kyle Lowry used to look
like. Yeah, Strus can shoot. Like, they have guys that can shoot, but Lowry was not a guy I was worried about.
You say that, but during the regular season, they were the 4th worst 3-point shooting team in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
And now all of a sudden, like, even Jimmy Butler's taking threes
without their best shooter.
Right.
Without Tyler Hero.
Now, Duncan Robinson can shoot, though.
He can. Yeah. But Tyler Hero's clearly a better. Like, Hero's a good player.
He's a good player.
Robinson's just a shooter.
Right.
Very one-dimensional. You know, he started Division III, Duncan Robinson.
He's turned himself into a good pro.
I think he went to, like, Williams.
He's turned himself into a really good pro.
And they transferred to Michigan. Yeah, no, he's had a good early NBA career. So, Mets yesterday. I mean, game one. Now, I give them a lot of credit. They really fought themselves right back into that game, made it a one-run game, and got to Strider, got to the Braves' bullpen. You allow 9 runs, you're not typically going to win a game. Game 2, go out there, big hit from Alvarez. Beatty was excellent yesterday. Now you're going to get Scherzer back. You're going to get Verlander back. Lucchese's been good. It feels like, I don't know if you agree with this, you've kind of weathered the storm and things should get better moving forward here.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that's hopefully going to be the case. And don't forget David Robertson with the
6-out save.
Yeah, right.
Big job by him.
Really good job by him. It's only the 4th career 6-out save he's had.
Very necessary, yeah. Though. I like the way Buck manipulates the bullpen.
Yeah, but I think the 2 names that you just mentioned, because we all expect when Verlander is finally back in pitching that he's going to be good. And hopefully Scherzer figures it out. But I think we've both said the entire time is, you know, Escobar has
it's been bad.
Well, he's become a problem at third.
Yes.
Okay? And, you know, what do we do as far as a power bat behind Pete Alonso? Because, you really don't have one. You don't.
You don't have anything behind Pete.
No, you don't.
Now, Vogelbach had a big hit yesterday, but you don't trust him at all.
I mean, power, though. I mean, hit home runs. Is there anyone in that lineup outside of Pete Alonso that scares you home run-wise?
No.
No.
I mean, listen, they have some guys that can hit some home runs, but there's not a power bat in that lineup, no.
Okay, so gets me to my point. And Buck went out of his way yesterday to talk about Francisco Alvarez and how proud he is of the job he's doing behind the plate. Because that's going to be, I mean, that's vitally important. This team is built around its starting pitching. Right or wrong? Is that right or wrong?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And you got 2 veterans at the top of that. So you're going to need a guy that is comfortable catching these guys. On top of that, you got Senga. This is not an easy staff to catch.
Nope.
So if you want his bat in the lineup, the defense has to be right. So the fact that Buck keeps going out of his way to praise his defense, I think, is important. And I also think plays a big role in his success offensively. Like, it almost feels like the Gary Sanchez conversations that we would have, where you knew what he was capable of offensively, but once he started struggling defensively, knowing how important that was, it would affect his offense. So the fact that Alvarez is now figuring it out defensively, you need his bat. And because there's no catcher There is no catcher on this team besides him that has that kind of upside.
No.
Offensively.
No, no, no. Not even close. Like, I mean, Nito is, I mean, no. Bat-wise is awful, and Narvaez, who you like, is going to be out for a considerable amount of time. I will tell you this. Watching Alvarez play consistently now, it feels like the game is not, it felt like he was overwhelmed. It felt like
a
he was not
flying out of his hands.
Not ready for Major League Baseball. You put him in an untenuous situation by bringing him up at the end of last year when you desperately needed him. It feels like it's starting to click a little bit right now.
But that's important, man. I'm telling you. Like, I mean, if you want, like, especially getting the length you need in this lineup, if you're not going to have, you know, that big power behind Pete Alonso, but having guys like Beatty looks like he belongs, and he should be playing third base every day.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about that.
And as far as offensively, the capabilities that Alvarez has compared to the other two guys you have would be a huge lift to this lineup.
But how different does the lineup look now? If Beatty, I think Beatty's good. Like, I'm already of the mindset Beatty's a really, really good player. So now you're going to bat him sixth or seventh, and now if you put Alvarez eighth or ninth, now all of a sudden your lineup goes from a joke to looking legitimate.
Right. Right. With some, I mean, in Alvarez has legitimate power potential.
Oh, he was the number one prospect in all of baseball.
So, like, that, I mean, that, the upside of him compared to what you have at that position is night and day.
And Beatty's like Alvarez, I look at him, I'm like, if things go well, it could lead to here. Beatty, in my mind, that's not even a question. Like, he is already the guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think the hope was that when Narvaez went down, that this was the opportunity for Alvarez to establish himself, to get some legitimate playing time and prove to everybody that he belongs here.
Yeah.
Because we all know what that would do to our lineup. Because offensively, I mean, that position was a nothing. And you can only have so many nothings. Like, if DH is just going to be okay,
right,
and left field is just going to be okay, I can't look around my lineup and be like, well, this is not good, this is not good. Like, there's too many holes.
Then you're the Yankees.
Yeah, right, there's too many holes. And catcher now with him is not, it shouldn't be a hole.
Correct. And third base is not a hole anymore. So now
if
DH is a hole and left field is somewhat of a hole, all right, you know what, yeah, I can fill those at some point, but at least there's more length to this lineup now. And now you get Verlander back. He's going to be back this week. Scherzer's going to be back this week. So all of a sudden, it's like, all right, you know what? You can take a breath. It feels like the Mets have weathered the storm and they're going to be okay. And I give them a lot of credit for yesterday. Right? Game one, down 6-1, that game was over. That game was over. And they fought all the way back, really got themselves in position to even win that game. They didn't. Fine. Game two, come out. McGill, good enough. And you take care of business. Big
hits. Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is, though. When you saw the pitching matchup, you said to yourself,
in what game?
In the first game.
Oh, you thought they were going to get crushed,
right? You were like, "There's no."
Well, I mean, the Braves did crush them,
right? But to your point, they battled back. They
got
the
Strider.
They got the Strider. But I'm just saying, like when before those games even started, and you looked at the pitching matchups, you said to yourself, "Okay, I'd be happy just like find a way to just get that second one."
Yes.
Because you didn't feel like you didn't feel good about the first one.
No, but I give them a lot of credit for the way they responded in game one, and then they came out and they won game two. So I know they lost two out of three. Although the Friday game was
the first one
was ridiculous.
Fugazi.
Why did they even start that game?
I don't know. I have no idea.
And did you hear? I guess Heyman had an article on it. How much it would cost for the Mets to put up?
$800 million.
How is that possible?
Well, it's because I think it's naturally expensive, but then on top of it, the stadium's already built.
So if you build it with a roof, it's less expensive.
I think it'd be probably cheaper than now having to add it.
$800 million?
Yeah, is it worth it, though, to not have to deal with all this garbage?
I mean, it's worth it to the team. Is it worth it to him financially?
But how much money can you make, too, with all the other stuff you can add now?
Well, I guess you could do stuff in the offseason, right?
Off-season,
you can have concerts and
then you don't
boxing
have to worry
matches.
About, you have to worry about that stuff.
Could you have a Final Four?
I mean, $800 million is a lot, but... I mean, is that a lot of money to Steve Cohen and how much he
well,
can make having them?
Well, you go from October till end of March and you can have a million concerts.
Do whatever you want.
Right? You can bid for Final Four. How great would that be? Final Four in New York? Because they don't do it in regular arenas anymore.
I'm sure this is all the stuff that they would have to figure. I mean, if he's sniffing around doing it.
I mean, Yankees fans would lose their minds.
If the Mets got a retractable roof?
If the Mets built a retractable roof and the Yankees did not, lose their minds.
I like when the Yankees fans lose their minds, though.
You know, people
makes
are saying
me happy.
People are saying on Twitter that they enjoy when I lose my mind.
They do, because you're the savage.
Nick,
animal.
The Jets fanatic, says maybe it's because we root for opposite teams, but miserable Rothenberg is the best radio in the country. Show energy is just better, different.
Yeah, I like. I think I kind of agree with that.
RJ, you agree with that? That miserable Rothenberg is the most enjoyable,
most entertaining. I think. enjoyable.
It's not enjoyable for us, but it's most entertaining. Yeah, we're willing to suck it up.
Yeah.
But I think when my teams win is when it's most enjoyable, no?
No.
For you.
Like, you sing, but that's it, really.
But I'm positive.
You sing and mostly make fun of the Cowboys, even if it's not applicable.
Yeah, even if it doesn't apply.
I hate the Cowboys.
So, yeah, if there's a little bit of schadenfreude, then yes, you being miserable and angry is enjoyable. But other than that, I wouldn't call it enjoyable. It's entertaining. That's the right word.
So you think that me being miserable moves the needle? Like, people enjoy that?
They do.
So yeah. People are miserable then?
No, I don't think people are miserable, but I just think it's the most entertaining version of you.
Why would you take enjoyment in another person's misery?
No, I don't think it's... No one's enjoying your... Like when you snap, because you're more likely to snap when you're angry.
I think there's a lot of people today that want to carry themselves like you. It was an 8 o'clock start. Most people went right to bed, or they didn't, and they were mad all night. Wake up, they're still mad.
I woke up middle of the night, go to the bathroom, and you know, you have that moment of like, what's going on in life? Because you have that moment where you're kind of unclear. And yes. I was like, oh, that's right, the Rangers lost. Then I peed and I went back to sleep.
Yep. I think a lot of people want to just go yell at someone today. So I think that they find that in you, and I think Devils fans...
So you think I'm comforting?
Yeah, and I think the Devils fans want to check in on you and spar with you.
And mock you.
But here's my question. I was not drawing the ire of Devils fan. Like, what have I done to anger the Devils fan? I did nothing.
No, nothing, but you're the face of the Ranger fan, and they right now want to celebrate.
Honestly, being a Ranger fan is enough. That's what it comes down to.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Looking for more access to the show?
Why? Because you know why.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
Away we go.
Yeah, but just think, as miserable as you are right now.
Right now.
The Knicks have the ability to change all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Not really.
Come on.
Well, I mean, they can change it a bit tonight. If they win the series, I guess it would change a little bit.
Of course it would. Yeah, of course it would change. It's going to change. It'll be fine tomorrow.
I live in the moment, though. You know me.
That's what I'm saying. I know you. So the Knicks win tonight, and all of a sudden tomorrow you show up and you're happy. You're singing the whole thing.
Nah, it's going to take a couple days.
You heard they used our song as the promo for the Knicks stuff?
What do you mean?
On the station. I was listening the other day, and it was like some kind of Knicks promo on the station.
Okay.
And it was us singing, the four of us. The four.
We are New York, and we love basketball. We're going to take it all, because we're the New York Knicks.
That's good.
It's nice.
That really is good. Although I feel like RJ is clearly in the background.
Well, you can hear him, though.
Yeah, but faintly.
We are New York, and we love basketball. We're going to take it all, because we're the New York Knicks.
You can hear him right away in the beginning.
The beginning.
Right in the beginning. Then at the end, you can hear him.
Yeah. Oh, so you hear him at the beginning and the end.
No,
you're Ray the whole way through. You the whole way through.
And then Ray takes over. When we went quiet
because we got confused, and Ray jumped it.
It's because I was into
just
the music.
Trying to help.
You're
I had
terrific,
the microphone
Ray.
Up. I stood up.
How many people around the tri-state area you think are sick, like humming that song as they're going about their day now?
I sang it the entire day after we did that.
We are New York.
I couldn't get it out of my head.
And we love basketball.
It's catchy.
Very catchy.
Very catchy.
It's a nice song. Let's go to some of the calls. You like calls, right?
I love calls.
Well, let's go to Nick in Woodbridge. Nick, good morning. You're on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. So, need a good bounce back tonight. This is a must win in every sense of the word for the Knicks. Whether Butler plays or not, I think the recipe for success is 3-and-D. You got to be able to defend the three, and you have to shoot better than 20% from three if you're going to win this game. My heart did drop when Brunson was listed as questionable. I think he'll play. If Butler plays or not, the Knicks have to come out, and you need to get more from some of their key guys off the bench. I still feel good. You can win this game, turn the series right back around, and then you head to MSG South, and we will have some sense of a home court down there. So go Knicks.
Yeah, you win this game, and then you split down in Miami, and you come back for best of three, having home court back. It's fine.
The Knicks they've already shown you they can win on the road. I mean, the fact that they took care of business in Cleveland and didn't wait to bring it back to Madison Square Garden, I thought was big, too.
How about Miami? They're 5-1 in the postseason, yeah. Huh? Well, I guess also if you think about what they did at the beginning, they lost to Atlanta, right?
Yeah, they lost their first game.
And then won their second. And then they go 4-1 and then beat the Knicks.
Beat the Bucks.
And not only that, but they win game 5 in Milwaukee, and then game 1 at the Garden.
Yeah, they're playing good basketball.
They could go home here, conquering
well,
heroes.
It helps too when Jimmy Butler is just out of his mind.
You know
the
thing with him
against...
is they get him the ball, and he either goes up and scores... Or, and this is what they do so well, he creates a matchup, they double him, he kicks it out, And then they pass it over again. Then they get a wide open three. And they don't miss a lot of their threes like Cleveland did.
Yeah, see, the beauty of what Jimmy Butler does is that he does whatever the game calls for him to do. That's how, I mean, that's his mindset. If his team needs him to score, he'll be aggressive scoring. If
good rebound. He's just a good player.
He's a good player, man. I mean, he's a better version of Josh Hart. I think Tibbs actually mentioned
a much better version.
But I think
of Josh
actually,
Hart.
I think Tibbs has mentioned it that one of the reasons why he likes Josh Hart so much is because he reminds him a lot of.
I can't watch Josh Hart in the open court anymore.
You don't like that?
No. Pass it up to him at like three quarters court, and then he like dribbles, goes up in the air, and God knows what happens. Then no, I don't.
It's not what he's best at.
I don't like that at all.
It's not what he's best
at. Let's keep the ball out of his hands in the break, unless he's the finisher, and then that's fine. Let's go to Yesmin in Jersey. Good morning, Yesmin.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Morning, Rick. Dave, sorry about your Rangers, but I wanted to touch the Knicks. I believe that they need to be, you know, more aggressive. They were extremely aggressive in the first half, you know, either driving and passing. But I felt like, well, one, this shot needs to get better. And rebounding, I felt like they got all muscle and just the Knicks were, I'm sorry, the Heat were way better in the second half. And the Knicks, I felt like they changed the game plan.
They did. Yeah, I mean, it was clear. I mean, first half of that game, the Knicks dominated the paint. They had 40 points in the paint. And then second half, they only had 22. And you saw with Jalen Brunson especially. I mean, as soon as he got his feet into the paint, there was three Miami Heat players waiting for
him. Listen, Eric Spoelstra is not J.B. Bickerstaff.
Exactly right.
Eric Spoelstra is an elite
coach. And this is
coach.
Not the Cavs. This is a
not
much
the Cavs.
Tougher team.
Tougher.
Grittier.
Adebayo is a problem. Jimmy Butler, I'm sorry. I like Donovan Mitchell. Jimmy Butler is better than Donovan Mitchell. They shoot the ball well. This is a good team.
Oh, this kind of game, I mean, this is playoff suits Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
How he wants to play.
And he wants to be on the big stage, too. And this is a big stage, and he was absolutely phenomenal. Let's go to George in Morristown. Good morning, George.
Good morning, fellas. Dave, if how you are feeling this morning regarding the Rangers is indicative of how Ranger fans are feeling this morning, I am elated.
Good. I'm glad.
I'm a new hockey fan. Go Devils. I was at game two, and the thing that I learned quickly is that Rangers fans are animals. They're absolute animals. You came into our place and just demoralized us, and it was so good to see my Devils do their thing last night. Go Devils. Have a good one.
How long you been a Rangers, a Devils fan for?
3 months.
Oh, great. I'm sure you've gone through all the tough
no,
times.
No, stop it.
Oh, good for you,
stop
George.
It. George, this is the problem with hockey. He's a new hockey fan.
So
shut your mouth.
He's a bandwagon.
Congratulations,
George.
Bandwagon.
No, but to be fair, okay, so I'm black, right? And black people don't generally go toward hockey. I have a friend who's very much into hockey and is with the organization and has encouraged me to watch. And I've been putting it off for a couple years and decided to take the leap this year. So, you know, it's been a good run.
Welcome aboard.
It's been a good run.
Congratulations, George. Enjoy it.
You know, getting through all those tough times, George, must be, you know, you're a better man for it.
No,
he's a better man for it.
No.
Amazing to get through all the downtrodden times.
He's not saying that. He's saying that he's new to hockey. He's excited. He's decided to pick the Devils. And you guys treated him and the fan base like trash in game two.
I can't kill him for that.
No, right.
Of course, you was a defender.
But I will say this. He's a new Devils fan, and he's already been indoctrinated because the entire personality of the Devils
fan base is hating the Rangers.
That's all they
get
care about.
Get your own identity. You know what?
They won three cups. You think they'd be satisfied. They have a history to build on. No, their entire personality is hating the New York Rangers.
I have zero care in the world about the Devils. Really, none. If they do great, fine.
Well, that's why they hate you.
Why?
Because exactly what you just said. It's why Mets fans hate Yankees fans. Because you treat us like we're second class.
No, but I mean...
That's how you... That's what you just said.
How is that treating you like you're second
class?
Because
you don't get... I don't care.
They're irrelevant to me. To you.
Well, right. Who wants to be irrelevant? Nobody.
Well, you won't be irrelevant now. Root for those Carolina Hurricanes now.
So that's the thing. They're not irrelevant.
They're a terrific team, and they have a good history. They've been relevant forever.
It has nothing to do with that. It's how the Rangers fan, and Dave, being the Rangers fan I'm speaking about, looks at them. To Dave, the Devils are irrelevant.
I don't have a hatred of the Devil. I don't care.
Because you don't think they're a threat to you.
It's not about being a threat. I think they are a threat. Their team is a threat.
Do you hate the Braves?
I hate the Braves.
Okay, why?
Well, that's my big rival.
So if the Devils were a bigger threat, you'd hate the Devils.
At the end of the day, it's like that scene in Mad Men where they're in the elevator and the one
I never
guy
seen
says,
don't ruin it. I haven't seen it yet.
Spoiler. Do it now. Spoiler.
No, don't ruin it yet.
Well, the one guy says, I feel terrible for you, and he responds, I don't think about you at all. So that's what it comes down to.
It's exactly right.
Now I have no reason to watch it.
Stop.
Great. Thanks.
You weren't going to watch it anyway.
I am at some point. No. It's on my list.
Your list.
I have a
How
list.
How many things do you have on your DVR right now? A million?
We have about 300 hours on the DVR, yeah.
Of course. That you'll never watch.
That's not true. You know, we just finished Homeland.
Finally.
Oh, so, you know what? We're a little bit behind, but we're getting these things done.
Yeah, I don't see it happening.
Did you see the end of Homeland?
No, I haven't seen it's on my list.
Oh, I respect the list.
Yeah, right, yeah. Respect the list.
So you've never seen any Homeland?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, okay. So you started Homeland and you didn't finish it through?
Okay, listen.
That's weird.
Listen, it's not weird. If you live with my wife, you would understand. That we have 15 minutes at a time to watch something.
Why does she control all
she
the
falls
TV
asleep.
Viewing?
She falls asleep, and then I have to shut it off. Because God forbid I finish it without her. We finish at the same time, and then she goes to sleep. That's what a caring marriage is all about. We want to share the show, and then if I
understand watching with somebody, but why is it always nighttime watching?
Because there's no daytime watching. I have a 2-year-old running around, and he's in full baseball gear right
now. Doesn't he nap?
No.
He doesn't nap?
Did I tell you what? He comes to the Milo's baseball game the other day. His new thing is he needs to wear a baseball belt to make his outfit official.
Uh-huh.
He shows up. I look over. He's got a baseball jersey, baseball pants, cleats, socks, and a shin pad. One shin pad. That's it. That was it.
Does he play?
No.
So he just needs to dress the part?
Of every sport.
That's cute.
You name the sport. Feels like baseball.
He's maniacal, right?
Maniacal. If it's baseball, he goes, you get the helmet, everything.
So he stands in the way of you guys watching your shows.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. And plus now he's in a big boy bed, which he can get out of. And he just decides when he's ready.
He's up and out.
Roman.
You'll take have to look forward to, RJ?
A sword to the face.
This sounds great.
So if Rocco was your first,
be the last.
Would you have three kids?
No. I would give myself my own vasectomy.
Self vasectomy?
Do it yourself.
That
DIY.
Sounds very painful.
DIY? DIY.
Yeah, do. No, DIY.
Oh, DIY.
Do it yourself.
Do
I was going to say that in the beginning.
Yeah. You kind of joggled up
the
letters there a little bit.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN New York app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.